What is up, ladies and germs? We are back on another episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I am your co-host, Herms, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tyler O. And I wrote an article looking back at some of the biggest draft day mistakes from 2024 and the lessons we can learn from them in 2025. I will have the link to it in the description if you want to read the entire thing. But rather than just recapping the entire article, what we are going to do on this episode today is look at some of those tropes of these pitfalls, these fantasy traps that we fall into, and just try to see who we think those players might be in 2025, looking at some early ADP. But before we dive into it, Tyler, once again, how are you, my guy?
Thrilled to be here, as always. One thing I will say, if you're listening to this right now, maybe you're the commissioner of your redraft league, maybe you're not, get the people on the line. Boys, girls, friends, coworkers. And get that draft date sorted out. I'm dealing with that right now. People got golf trips. People got weddings. People can't do Labor Day weekend. It's time to get your draft day settled. If it's your home league, whatever league it is, if it's a reoccurring league, get on the line, get in the group chats, and find a day to draft. It's not fun right now. Should have done it months ago. Usually do. Didn't do it this year. That's the one piece of advice I guess I'll kick things off with. When you ask me how I'm doing, great besides trying to find a draft day for the home league, my man.
Getting out of the way now. I totally co-sign that. Please talk to people. Get that sorted out. But if you want to start thinking ahead on some of the decisions that you will make in this draft, you can start by contemplating the mistakes that you don't want to make. And the first mistake that I highlighted in this article, it's a trap that I like to call the "who else is there" trap, where we look at NFL backfields. Most of them have a guy we're pretty sure is going to be the backfield leader or at least take the majority of touches. But there's usually one or two where it's not obvious. There's just no name that we feel particularly good about. But over time, ADP kind of just picks one. We just decide who the favorite is, and that player pretty much always busts. Last year, it was Zamir White with the Raiders. Famously, in 2021, if I remember correctly, that was the Mike Davis year with the Atlanta Falcons. So looking at some of these backfields headed into 2025, I narrowed it down to two teams that have situations like this. We'll get to the other one, but I want to start with the most glaring example of this, and that would be in Dallas with the Cowboys. Javonte Williams, currently, according to our ADP on FTNFantasy.com, the RB36 going at pick 1001. It's still a double-digit round pick. If you're wrong, it doesn't kill you, but you are drafting a player at that cost to be a flex. If you're wrong, it'll hurt a little bit, and we have decided it's definitely Javonte Williams. Because the next Dallas running back that shows up is rookie Jaden Blue at RB48 at, on average, pick 1309. And then we don't get to, you know, like Phil Maffa and any of these other guys that are there. Miles Sanders, another name who I think might actually be a bigger threat. I'm scrolling and I still have not found Miles Sanders' name yet. Don't you think that's a bit presumptuous?
I do. I mean, that's the thing. It's tough because he's cheap enough to where, like, you're like, oh, I get it. But they're, by looking at the ADP, it does seem like we're like, all right, it's going to be Javonte Williams. And my issue with that is there's other guys in that range where I just don't really like taking any of the running backs in that range. Like, my biggest issue with Javonte Williams is everyone's like, oh, it could be him. He's going in a range with guys like Josh Downs is literally right next to him in the ADP I'm looking at, which he's a guy that I'm absolutely aggressively targeting. There's some decent tight ends in Jake Ferguson, our teammate Tucker Kraft. There's a couple guys that go after him that, like, I kind of like as sleepers. Like, you know, even Rashad White, think he could catch some balls there. For me, it's just Javonte Williams' ADP doesn't make some sense. I'm not necessarily mad about it, but the gap between the other guys is just far too big that, when we have this ambiguous backfield, why aren't we just taking Miles Sanders in the last pick of our draft just to see what happens? If it doesn't work out, you can drop him. And Jaden Blue, pretty good pass catcher. I mean, I'm pretty certain that he caught about 40 balls his last season there. He could easily be the pass catching back to own there. Yeah, he's a little undersized, probably won't be a workhorse. But for me, he showed that he's dust, man. I don't know what people are looking at to be even having a slight amount of excitement for Javonte Williams, man. It did not look good last season. Nothing about it looked good. And I get he did look good, but whatever injury he sustained in his knee, I think it slowed him down. Again, the price, not bad, but we just seriously need to be considering that there could easily be some other options here. And those options happen to be free. And there's some quality players going around Javonte Williams, man. So he's a guy that I've just not been clicking.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And also, I finally found Miles Sanders' name on this ADP list. You are going to freak when you figure out not only where he's being drafted, but also I'm going to give you a couple of the names that are going ahead of him. So first I'll tell you, the Miles Sanders ADP, RB91, according to our site. That, first of all, absolutely nutty. Then, when we talk about a couple of the names who are going over him, James White, who doesn't even play anymore, according to our ADP, is RB85. People are more interested in a retired football player than they are in Miles Sanders. Another name, Raheem Mostert, who at this point, like, look, man, the Raiders drafted Ashton Jeanthi. There is absolutely no reason to be interested in Raheem Mostert at all. And another thing I want to point out to people, one of the first articles that I wrote upon joining FTN was going through the recent history of free agency and trying to, you know, glean what we could from, you know, the size of these contracts and the amount of money that, you know, teams are willing to pay to certain players and how much it actually matters for fantasy. Most running backs who actually do something and finish as like an RB2 or better are paid about $7 million a year.
Whoop. Timeout, Herms from the future in post-production here to correct the record and say that my article found running backs who signed for agent contracts and went on to finish as an RB2 or better typically signed for at least $7 million, not an average of $7 million. Just really wanted to correct that and get my facts straight. Anyways, back to the podcast.
That is based on the research that I did. I think I looked at the past 3 years of free agency prior to that. It's a whole thing. But yeah, Javonte Williams not really being paid that much. It's 1 year, $3 million. There's no guarantee, man.
I'm with you, dude. It's one of those things, too, where like Miles Sanders, yeah, he's, I believe, 28. But he's two seasons removed from, I think, 1,200 yards and like a double-digit touchdowns. Javonte Williams has never done anything even close to that, man. Yeah, he's a little bit younger, but dude, I don't know. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, man. But it's just one of those things where this gap makes no sense.
Yeah, you know, I think we've definitely explored about as much of this as we're going to get out of it. We're going to take a quick break. We have another one to talk about, another backfield that is a little bit confusing. So sit tight and. Welcome back to the Crossing Routes podcast. It's your boy Herms. It's your boy Tyler O. And we are talking about some mistakes to avoid, some pitfalls that you don't want to fall into when you are drafting your team in 2025. The other backfield that I was referencing, I want to point out to people, currently in ADP, Tyrone Tracy Jr. of the New York Giants is the RB25. I don't think that's a crazy price, but Cam Scadabo being all the way down there at RB42. I think that's a little bit too much of a gap. I would also pick Tyrone Tracy as my favorite to lead this backfield. He was honestly one of the only bright spots of this Giants offense in 2024. But Cam Scadabo is a guy they took early enough. I want to say the fourth round. It's still day three, but it's like early day three. And he represents like a physical archetype that is different to Tracy. He is a bigger guy. He is probably going to do a little bit more of the barreling between the tackles type stuff, more one of those gap runners. And I think that his complementary skill set is going to be nice enough that they're probably going to split the touches enough. Do you think RB25 all the way down to RB42 is really justified in this situation? Do you have a preference of one over the other in New York? Just, I don't know. How do you feel generally about this backfield?
Yeah, I mean, I got him a lot closer in terms of rank. I have Tracy lower, and I have Scadabo higher. So I guess that would kind of put me in the Scadabo range. I do like Tracy a lot. And even though I have him ranked that way, I've not been taking a lot of Cam Scadabo. Maybe I need to move him down a bit. But for me, I still would like bet on Tracy. And even if, yes, there is a split, I know people out there are going to tell you that Cam Scadabo is a good pass catcher, but so is Tyrone Tracy. Tyrone Tracy played wide receiver in college. He's a better pass catcher. Let's put that out. So even if there is a split, I think Tyrone Tracy is going to be the pass catching back there in the Giants, right? And I kind of want to throw something here. It's kind of a bit of a curveball, probably a little bit of a hot take. What if the Scadabo pick was more so to compete with or possibly replace Singletary? No one is even talking about him right now. And I don't necessarily think he is going to have anything major. I mean, Tyrone Tracy took his role, but like, what has Singletary been? An unexciting back, but for some reason, the coaches love him. He does the right things. Up until last year, he had always gotten looks. So I think everyone has just written off Devin Singletary as if he is the clear third back in this situation. But this is just another reason why we need to talk about these ambiguous backfields, because what if he's not? What if he still gets 30% of the snaps? What if he still gets 40% of the snaps? Like, what does that mean for Scadabo? What does that mean for Tracy? Who becomes like the real lead back between Scadabo and Tracy? So I actually have all, I have Tracy below that ADP. I do have Scadabo a little higher than that, but I haven't been taking him. Obviously not taking Singletary. But for me, I think there's not enough discourse because everyone's just like, oh, Tracy or Scadabo. But what if there is that third factor in there in Devin Singletary, who's still 27 years old? He's not old, right? He's still, I don't say he looked good last year, but I mean, he had 113 attempts, 434 yards, four touchdowns, still caught 21 balls. He's had seasons where he's caught 40 balls before consistently. Never been necessarily a guy that breaks 1,000 yards rushing or is going to get, you know, the lion's share of the carries. But there's just a third element to this Giants backfield that I think we are just completely dismissing that at least needs to be talked about.
You're right. And I am those people. I will freely admit, I honestly kind of forgot about Devin Singletary. But once you mentioned his name, it caused me to look up something real quick. I forgot. You know who the offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills was when they drafted Devin Singletary? Brian Daboll, the current head coach of the New York Giants, the team that employs Devin Singletary.
Yeah. He loves him, man. He loves him.
Exactly. Like, there are situations like this in sports where there are coaches who will bring in their guys and trust their guys that they know from previous stops. Yeah, it's a much greater than non-zero chance that this could be a weird three-headed thing. So, you know, another trope that I think people get a little bit too caught up in sometimes, you know, speaking of running backs, the talent over situation thing. This normally applies to dynasty, I think, when people get really excited about like high draft capital wide receivers who were hoping like, oh, maybe their team will get a quarterback someday, maybe they'll go somewhere else, blah blah blah. But it also does happen with running backs too, where even if they're in a bad offense, we figure, well, I mean, they're a pretty talented guy. We've seen him do it before, and it'll be perfectly okay. You know, I think we kind of fell into that trap a little bit with like Travis Etienne last year with the Jaguars. He was drafted very highly, but that situation just wasn't good enough to foster enough points out of that backfield. And the one that I'm kind of afraid of it being this year is Breece Hall. Being selected right now, ADP RB13, I think it's fine. I think it's a little too early to get super concerned about this, but I do want to at least remind people. The Jets' new head coach, Aaron Glenn, one of the things he mentioned, having a three-headed committee backfield. That is something that he has brought up, said out loud, and let's say we get further into training camp and they seem pretty serious about this. What is like the highest ADP price tag you would be willing to pay for Breece Hall in that situation? Because I imagine if this starts to look like it's going to come true, RB13 is going to be just a terrible, terrible price.
Yeah. So like the highest I would pay for Breece Hall, I mean, 13 is not too far off. Like, let's just say like, I feel I've spoke before about how I'm low on Bucky Irving. That's kind of like the range. He goes at RB8. I don't have Bucky Irving at RB8. I certainly would not be taking Breece Hall over Josh Jacobs right now, considering the makeup of the Packers offense and how well they run the ball and how good Josh Jacobs looked. It's kind of like this range where it's like QB running back like 10 through 13. So I'd probably say the highest I would take him is like RB10. I haven't done that much lately, but for how much I've waffled on Breece's spot, like I've moved him up and down around Bucky, around Kyren, around Chase Brown, around Jonathan Taylor, I can't seem to find the spot because I know deep down, like, I believe he's talented. I believe he's probably one of the top five, top six running back talents in the NFL, but doesn't matter if the Jets don't think that. It doesn't matter if the Jets don't give him the looks. So he's a scary click. Even at RB13, he's a scary click, but the guys that go after him, like James Cook, Kenneth Walker, Mixon, Kamara, I do like these guys, but I would comfortably take Breece Hall just based on talent over those names that I just mentioned. So he floats around the RB10 to RB13 range for me. Definitely a guy that I'm still going to be moving all the way up until draft day. I get the concerns. I love the talent. But man, I need some drum beats, man. I don't know if I'm getting answers before it's time to draft. But I just need a little bit more information. I need to feel a little more confident. I need to maybe see him in a preseason game or two for like the first couple of carries. But dude, he's electric. He's a home run hitter. He proved that he's got his speed back after the knee injury. It's just tough for me to sit here and definitively like tell everyone like buy Breece Hall, because the rumblings, the murmurs give me some pause.
Exactly. And like, I think that's kind of like, again, I'm looking at this from the perspective that the hypothetical situation of we're further into training camp and it's starting to look like this split is actually possible. That is where I'm trying to figure out how far I want to move Breece Hall down. And I'm thinking if all of that does come true, I probably won't feel comfortable with him until we get into those like late RB2 price tags, because at that point the risk is, commensurate with the reward. It's a little different than what we were talking about before with these totally ambiguous backfields, because like at least we know Breece Hall. We've seen him like do really good stuff before, but it just gives me the heebie-jeebies, man. It just gives me the heebie-jeebies. But
I don't think I could get below RB like 16, 17. So I'm not totally with you, but there's some fear. The fear that you have with Breece, I think, is fair, but I would be betting on talent over, what's going to, I expect him to win out. I don't think the three-headed monster is what? Braylon Allen, Plotter, Isaiah Davis looked a little better than I gave him credit for. Not even going to lie about that one. I definitely slept on him a little bit, but man, I just think he's on such a different tier level of talent that it's tough for me to not see him win out. So I don't think I could lower him that much. But again, I said I think he's a top 5-6 talent, and I have him down, around that 13 range. I think that's kind of like says where I'm at with him, right? And I think everyone kind of feels that same way. So I think for me, that kind of concern with the three-headed monster is already baked in, and I do want to bet on Breece, because you can get him in the fourth round now, and if he is an RB2 and you took him in the fourth round, probably won't ruin your season, but I hear your Herms. I just can't get that low.
Ah, fair enough. And again, to reiterate, before we move on to our final topic, I'm only worried about that if we find out later that it's starting to come true. For right now, I am not really worried about it. Do think the RB13 price tag is fine. Just saying, something that we might want to monitor as time goes along. One of the names that you had highlighted, somebody that fits into the buying too much into small sample sizes. This is something that we do get caught up in a lot. My examples in the article were, Tank Dell, the 4 starts we got out of Anthony Richardson. People were just drafting him like gangbusters. I don't know why we did that, but that's a whole other can of worms that we don't have time to open. But you have a pretty good name of somebody that people are getting excited about, but we just haven't seen enough from yet.
Ricky Pearsall is going to be that name for me. He's not like too expensive right now. I believe when I saw him in his ADP, he was going, wide receiver 45, ninth round, goes a little bit earlier in best ball on underdog. Finished the season extremely strong again. Like, shout out, this dude survived a little legitimate shooting. Like, again, love to see that for him, like, come back from that. And then finish the season with 2 really strong games in week 17 and week 18. But the thing is, man, it's not always so much about the price. It's about what you can get around him. And I see a player like Josh Downs going 2 picks after Ricky Pearsall, and it really makes me say, what the hell are we doing here? Josh Downs finally catching some steam this offseason. Always been a hell of a player. Biggest issue is he was tied to Anthony Richardson, who's just not a good thrower of the football. Nope. I don't think Daniel Jones is necessarily great, but he's certainly an upgrade in terms of a passer, and I will be taking Josh Downs 10 out of 10 times over Ricky Pearsall without questions asked. I mean, just to give you an idea, like, there's guys that are going after him. Juwan Jennings, his own teammate. I would rather draft Juwan Jennings at that same price, and you don't even have to. You can wait two rounds to get Juwan Jennings. Juwan Jennings was an absolute stud last year. I think everyone has just assumed that, oh, like Pearsall is going to come in and take a spot. I don't think so, man. I think in terms of targets, we saw Juwan Jennings finish the season 10 targets, 10 targets, 6, 9, 8. He was a legitimate target hawk. He saw double-digit targets, I think, four times in his last, I believe, 10 games, 8 games, something like that. I would much rather have Juwan Jennings at cost. Now, even if Juwan Jennings was the same price as Pearsall, I would easily go him over Ricky Pearsall.
I feel that, man. And, you know, just to highlight some other names of some other receivers that are going around Ricky Pearsall, just to really drive that point home, Darnell Mooney being there at wide receiver 49, it's not as though he was bad by any means last year. He was pretty helpful for fantasy managers. He had a target share like almost 20% down there. 6.7 targets per game, according to our NFL stats hub. Like, he had a lot of work go his way, and that role really doesn't seem like it's in much of a threat either. So, like, I would probably go with Darnell Mooney over somebody like Ricky Pearsall. I think perhaps even Christian Kirk. I know it's weird to get it's busy. It's busy in Houston. I know. But Christian Kirk is a guy we've seen be way more reliable than he ever gets credit for in the NFL. And wide receiver 56, the first pick of the 12th round. Yeah, I would probably rather do that than spend this premium price on Ricky Pearsall. Like, I get it. He's fun. I hope things go well for him, but it is a little bit too rich for my blood too. So I definitely see your perspective on that and definitely share some of those concerns, especially just the Juwan Jennings thing, man. Put some respect on his name, people. Juwan Jennings is a really good football player.
Do it.
Yeah. So just, I think it's another one of those situations where we just love the young, kind of fresh new toy, the shiny new object that we get to play with. And like, save that for Dynasty, people. I love playing that game and trying to figure out who the future stars of tomorrow are going to be. But season-long redraft fantasy football doesn't care much for that. It doesn't care much for what's going to happen in 2026 and 27 and 28. I am primarily concerned about what is going to take place in 2025. And all of those things feel a lot better realistically happening in 2025. So, you know, maybe I didn't need to go that aggro with it, but sometimes
you're good, Herms. You need to sometimes.
Yeah, I think sometimes I get spicy, you know, sometimes you just have to let it out, go en fuego. But I think before I get any spicier, we should probably wrap it up for this episode. But hey, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Crossing Routes podcast. If you want to take a look at my article reviewing 2024's past mistakes and how we can avoid them again in 2025, the link will be in the episode description. You just got to click, do a couple things. You have no excuse not to check it out. But until next week, I am Herms, he is Tyler O, and we are out of here.